This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 076.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Jonathan, tell me how your day's going.
Michael, my day's going better, seeing as I get to look at you and the Elvis look that you have going on right now.
I do need a haircut, but let's stay on point here.
It is awesome. It is awesome. You've got flow going on.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think I was sick or something when my last hair appointment was. And then it's like, if you have even the mildest cough now, you're too scared to like go anywhere because everyone looks at you like, oh my God, you're contaminating everyone. So I just stayed home. I might not get my hair cut all year.
I don't think you should. No, just let it rock.
Okay.
I bet Rosalie loves it.
Doesn't mind it.
Okay. No, I wouldn't doubt it.
Enough of the hair. What's happening in your world?
You know what? We're into February already. We're recording this in early February, and hey, it's a great start to the year. We're already into month two. We're making some plans, making some action happen on the business side, personal front, been able to get out and share. We were out skiing last weekend with the kids. It's fun. So you know, we're in full life mode right now.
Yep. Nice.
Gonna do some traveling here for work this month, which is not a bad thing at all within Alberta and Saskatchewan. So good spots.
Yeah,
you are. What's shaking your world?
I'm going down to Florida in March. This is that group, my Monday night pod, like accountability group. We audibled. We were going to Austin. Okay. So Tanasia, I apologize because I was trying to like see who was all in Texas and meet some people, but we've audibled over to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I haven't traveled in so long. Like, I don't even know what that's going to be like. I just booked my flights. I'll have to figure out all the border stuff, but I don't know.
When are you going?
What's that?
When are you going?
I think it's like March 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th or something. Just like an extended weekend kind of thing in there. So it'll be a little bit of masterminding, but honestly, it'll also be a decent amount of beer drinking on the beach. So
that's what I was thinking. I was wondering how warm is it going to be out there when you guys are down there?
It doesn't matter, man. I'm used to minus 30 Celsius. It does not matter what the temperature is. I'm wearing shorts.
Like shorts and the 30 plus to keep the old sun off the white skin that is Canadians.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun. I am envious of you and also excited for you because what, this is 2 years plus that you've been trying to get together with these guys?
Yeah, we booked it for April of 2020 in New Orleans. That got canceled. Somewhere in 2021, that got canceled. So now here we are, 2022. Again, I haven't met any of them officially in person, but we talk every week. And honestly, I know them like as well as I know you. Like we dive into deep stuff.
It's pretty awesome. Yep. Yeah, that's exciting. Well, looking forward to stories that you're willing to share on our G-rated podcast when you return.
Yeah, there'll be no stories. I'll just, oh, it was canceled. I never went. Yeah,
no, just like that.
Yep. Okay. Well, for everyone, if you remember, Dr. Jordan Woodsworth was on the podcast October 20th for 2021 for episode 60. And was back on for our eggnog roundtable episode 70. And we had said we were going to do this. We were going to pester her until she agreed to come back and go through her four core communication skills that she mentioned in her episode. So we've kind of queued that up. We have a little four-part mini series for you. Today is part one of that where we dive into open-ended questions. Not going to really dive into Jordan's bio. You can check that out on the previous episode. Just as a reminder, she's from the best veterinary graduating class ever, WCVM 2008. She's a PhD candidate. She works at the WCVM. kind of spearheading their wellness preventive medicine course and rotation. This is fun, Jonathan. I don't know. Did you get like diving into it? I know, funnily enough here, we both mentioned to her the book Never Split the Difference, which goes into like open-ended questions, you know, the nonverbal communication. And I might have to get Jordan a copy of that because she hadn't read it. And I think being the communication nerd that she is, she will love it.
She spoke about mirroring, labeling, not the late night radio DJ style talk, but basically the same thing of slowing it down, making it sound better, going with it. She had all the moves that this book, who is a former FBI negotiator, had. Well worth it. I think you got to pull those moves. She's in there already.
You did very good there, Jonathan, at slowing it down and changing your tone. And Jordan was excellent at it also, like in our conversations, how she would turn it on and off slower, faster.
I could feel it. There was a couple times I'm like, this is getting uncomfortable, but in such a good way.
That's too funny. Okay, everyone, enjoy this four-part series. There's a lot of value here. Jordan really has a wealth of knowledge here. Dive into them. We are also on YouTube. So for some of these conversations, seeing our pretty faces can actually add to them. And especially when we get into the nonverbal stuff, we talk about how so much of the communication comes from more than what we just say. But anyway, you're going to love it. I give you Dr. Jordan Woodsworth. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Dr. Jordan Woodsworth with us again for her third time, our first three-peat on the podcast.
Three-peat. I like that.
Yep. And of course, the eggnog roundtable, that counts. That was a fun episode with you. So good to have you back. If anyone remembers Jordan's initial episode, that was episode 60, October 20th, I told her then we were going to drag her back here because she kind of hinted at us on these four sort of core communication skills. And I think you called them back pocket skills. So here we are, we have you back. We're diving into open-ended questions today. So why don't you kind of cue it up? We're doing this little four-part mini series. Why should our listeners care about these skills? And then let's dive into open-ended questions.
Yeah. Okay. So the why should we care is a super important question because I think, you know, as veterinarians, we spend most of our day communicating. That's a huge part of what we do in practice. And I always tell people it's a big part of the art of veterinary medicine. So if you can do a good job at communication, often that means that you're going to be very good at your job. And so a lot of us naturally have these skills, but there are several of them that we can learn to do even better to improve our efficacy as clinicians and as team members as well. So the one thing that I'll mention before I get too much ahead of myself is that the stuff that I'm talking about, I learned when I went through communications facilitation training. And so that's through the Institute for Healthcare Communications in New Haven, Connecticut. And so a lot of the stuff that I'm going to talk about today comes from their modules and was funded by Bayer Animal Health. So that's my little disclaimer. This is not stuff that I've created off the top of my head, but I have my own spin on it, of course. So what I normally do when I start talking about core communication skills, and I think you mentioned, Mikey, there's four of them. So some of the reasons why we need to care about these and learn how to do them well is because this isn't something that is just, you know, an optional thing, right? We all have to communicate all the time. And so one of the big things, there are sort of five reasons that I say we should, you know, learn how to be excellent communicators. One of them is diagnostic accuracy. So when we get into talking about open-ended questions, much of the time we're talking about that in the context of history taking. And so we actually can, if we do a really good job at history taking and at our communication, between 60 and 80% of the time, we can get a diagnosis for our patients with just a physical exam and a history. And so, of course, all of us are pretty darn proficient at a thorough physical exam by the time we've seen 100 patients, right? But it's this communication skill around history taking and how we elicit a client's story that really can help us with that diagnostic accuracy. So again, up to 85% of that diagnosis can come just from the history alone. So 60 to 80% of the time, 85% of our diagnosis can come from history. And even outside of that 60 to 80% of the time, still, right? Because that's where we learned about what's actually going on, where we need to move next, all of that jazz. So to me, that alone is reason enough to learn how to do this well. The second thing is people adhere to our recommendations better. Our clients adhere to our recommendations better when we do a good job of communicating the why behind our recommendations. And so I think we do often a really good job of explaining in a way that other clinicians or other healthcare professionals might understand, right? What we're doing and why we want to do it. And sometimes when we're getting into the flow of things and when we're busy and, you know, overworked, we can kind of just do the thing where we take a problem, we decide on the solution, and then we tell people that's what's happening without explaining to them the why, without having gathered enough information from them to understand whether this is actually something that fits into their life. And then we don't have good adherence and we're frustrated and we wonder why the heck not, right? I made a perfectly excellent recommendation. Why did you not follow it? So, statistically speaking, we have about and this was sort of old data, but about 23 to 65% adherence from our recommendations with clients. And largely that's because we don't have enough information that's given to them. We haven't established trust in a good way. We don't do follow-up well. And then again, the client's opinion in the context of their life isn't necessarily considered well. So that's really important. And that kind of feeds into quality of client care. So again, ineffective team communication, bad client care, and therefore bad patient care much of the time. One other thing, and I think, like, you know, Johnny, you're in practice management, and I think, you know, thinking about complaints and how we deal with client complaints, and I know you've talked a lot about that this is something that is a part of your job, right? About 82% of malpractice suits against veterinarians and human physicians are usually due to communication errors. So if we can clean up a lot of that stuff, that can really make a difference as far as our malpractice stuff. And I know, you know, in Canada, we maybe don't have quite as much, you know, litigation around malpractice as they do in the States, for example. But it happens, and I think it's happening more now than it did. And so that's one thing that we can really do to attack that statistic as well.
I have a question for you, Jordan. Open-ended questions. When you're going into training with your teams, with your students, purely subjective, what percentages of your students or your teams do you think do a good job with it as compared to really need a lot of training and help?
Everybody needs a lot of training and help. So this is, yeah, like everybody, because I think it's a style of questioning that doesn't come naturally to us. We're creatures of immediate gratification. So we want to like ask the question and get the answer immediately. We don't want to wait for people to answer us, right? And so I think that, you know, being impatient often has a lot to do with us not using those open-ended questions. Yeah. But also I think much of the time we don't know how to do it in an artful way so that you can ask a really specific question, but in an open-ended manner. So that's, yeah, and we can talk more about that as well. But sort of the last piece of the why we care about this stuff is client and team satisfaction. So again, the better we do with communicating all around, using all of these skills and all of the auxiliary skills that we're not going to get into in this four-part series, is, you know, we're going to have better satisfaction all around. And the primary cause of staff turnover is ineffective communication. So always the better we can do. I mean, if this isn't reason enough, then heck, whoever's listening better not listen on, right? Well, that's not enough justification for you.
It's kind of the golden ticket here. It's like better relationships amongst the staff, better client outcomes, you know, better sort of happiness across the board. It seems like if you can dial in the communication.
Absolutely. And I think one of the tricky things is that we're all human. And so inevitably our responses, our emotions come into all of this. And some of these things, like, you know, having stories from our past come into our communication and sort of interrupt some of that. All of that plays a role in why some of this falls down sometimes. But I think a lot of it has to do with just not knowing how to do it differently for a lot of folks as well. Not knowing some of the details behind this. So that's why it's great for us to talk about it. So I think, you know, thinking about all the different pieces of communication, it's, you know, we have the piece of what we say, but we also have the how we say those things. And then we have those internal thoughts and feelings. And all of these things work together to influence how we communicate and the impact of our communication. So, I mean, we've heard so much, especially in media in the last couple of years, that intent and impact are two very different things. And so we might have really excellent intentions, and yet the impact of what we're doing and saying may not be so great because of the way that we're using our communication or not using it appropriately. So that's kind of my little soapbox about why we should get excited about this stuff. And for me, it is really exciting because I think that, you know, again, I've said before that I hate the term soft skills because to me, and Johnny, you mentioned this before, this is a transferable skill, right? These are things that we can use in every aspect of our life to improve our interpersonal stuff. So whether it's, you know, you're frustrated with somebody in a service industry context, or you are having a difficult time with one of your kids or with your spouse or with a family member, right? You can use these skills to help you with those conversations. Yeah.
So let's jump into those. What do you think, Mike? Should we put Jordan on the spot?
Let's get a little PhD in open-ended questions here, Jordan. Okay. So I guess lay it on us. The obvious first question is, what is an open-ended question?
Well, you just asked me one, so well done. So open-ended questions are those that can't really be answered with a one-word answer. And so we always learn that open-ended questions or closed-ended questions are those that usually have a yes or no answer. And that's very true. But sometimes we can have closed-ended questions that don't result in a yes or no, but result in a one-word answer. And so open-ended questions are those that really stimulate a more detailed and thorough response. And so, you know, when we talk about things like history taking with students, we really spend a lot of time teaching them how to ask open-ended questions for their thorough wellness history. And we find oftentimes that if you do a good job of asking your initial open-ended question to a client, you can get the majority of your history in one go. And so there's this concept of funneling that we talk about in communications, where you start with quite a broad open-ended question. And then depending on what you're looking for and what you get with that initial question, you get a little more narrow as you go through it. And then eventually you're going to get to some closed-ended questions to get those fine details, right? And I tend to be a little bit of a purist with this stuff. And so I tend to encourage people to, as much as possible, use open-ended questions, because I find that that's when you're going to get the most valuable answers. And it really does change the character of your conversations when you're able to ask these questions. And so you guys will know that with podcasts, right? You get more of a story when you ask an open-ended question. So yeah. So usually the ways to begin an open-ended question are like the five W's, right? Like who, what, when, where, why. And then also how, also tell me, also describe or explain, right? So those are all ways to start an open-ended question that will encourage folks to tell a story. So we tend to do this thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Of those five whys and the additional ones, do you in your purest form have ones you like better than others?
I do. This is such a good question. So I tend to use what and how and tell me the most. There are only certain contexts where who and when are going to be relevant, right? Why is a tricky one. Why is difficult? Because oftentimes it can come across as judgmental. And so especially depending on the circumstance where you're asking it. So let's say we have someone who's come in because their dog was hit by a car, right? So they've got this dog with a broken leg and maybe some other injuries who's come through the door. And you're asking some questions about the circumstances around this event. And instead of saying something like, tell me what happened before he ran out into the street, you say, why was the gate open? Right? That's a really different conversation. And there's a much different reaction that probably you're going to get from your client, depending on which of those you choose. And so we tend to steer students away a little bit from asking why, because it tends to have that accusatory connotation. So I love that question, because I think it's a really important one. Yeah. I think having people sort of get used to this idea of starting their questions with those W words or with the describe, tell me, please explain is really important. So we might do the thing where we start out with tell me what happened, right? That's a great open-ended question. That's going to get you a lot of information. But whereas if you're asking a closed-ended question, you're saying, was the gate open? Yes or no, right? Was his leash on, right? Yes or no. Did the front door get left open? Yes or no. It's going to take you a while to get all the details of this circumstance. And I mentioned before that a lot of what holds us back from asking open-ended questions is impatience. And so we tend to think that if we give clients the space and time to give you the open-ended answer, it's going to take forever and ain't nobody got time for that, right? Whereas actually, when folks at OVC and Guelph did a study on this, they found that on average, with a really broad open-ended question, it takes clients only about, 2.5 minutes to tell their full story. So it's really not that long. You know, we've all got 2.5 minutes to collect a history. And so I think that we need to remember that our perception of time usually in those circumstances is very skewed. And we will find for the average client that even if we ask a super broad question, we're going to get a lot of detail and a lot of valuable detail if we're patient enough to wait for it without interrupting, right?
I think that's the key. I'm thinking back here, sitting in the exam room, and unfortunately, sometimes you've got to get through that first 30 seconds where it's like mostly irrelevant information. And, you know, they're just sort of unloading some stuff they want off their chest. And then they get into like the meat of what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that it's really important to not discount that initial 30 seconds, because what you're doing in that time is you're building rapport and you're building trust.
Yes.
And so people want a relationship with the folks who are providing care to their critters, right? And so, yeah, like we know statistically speaking that we get more details about people's lives than most other professionals, right? It's us dentists and hairdressers that get the most details. And so, you know, that can be like a little bit of a heavy burden sometimes, particularly when people tell us stuff that is like way beyond what we want to know. But I think that largely we need to really focus on the importance of that little bit of rapport building time and see it as worth our while. Because remember back to when we were talking about the reasons why we should care about communications and people not adhering to our recommendations, lack of trust is one of the reasons for that. And so if we can build that by caring about who their kids are, caring about what sports they're in, you know, where they go to the lake, all that sort of stuff, that's going to be huge for our longstanding relationships with those people.
Yeah. So this is sort of a tangent on this like open-ended training with students. Do you train comfort in like space and silence? Because I think that's one of the best skills is when there's a break in the conversation and there's silence is to just let it sit and mm-hmm. let them come back and fill it, or maybe like nudge it with a tell me more, but then just back out.
Absolutely. So we talk about it a lot. And it's one of those things that when we're doing simulated client scenarios with our students, we will give that feedback, right? Like if they're asking questions, but then they're not giving clients enough time to answer, or they're interrupting them, or whatever it happens to be, that's a big piece of feedback that we'll give them, is that silence is a tool, right? Silence is a communication tool, just the same as open-ended questions is a communication tool. And so we need to use that. It is uncomfortable, like you said. And so like, I'm an over-talker. It's really difficult for me to pause in my conversations because I would prefer to be talking all the time. And so that's something that I've really had to learn. And I kind of have to sometimes like physically sit on my hands just to like, because I'm such a hand talker, to be like, okay, you need to shut up now. Because it's difficult for me to do that. But I think, yeah, absolutely. We definitely talk about it a lot with students and have them practice it if it's difficult for them.
How do you like to take, if I may jump in, Mike, sorry. How do you take the open-ended question, then the silence, and then go into the direct questions that you need to ask sometimes? And now I'm speaking more to anyday life, not even in a history-taking format within veterinary clinic. How do you train that? Or is that trainable? I always wonder about that. Is it actually trainable?
You're kind of talking about that funneling concept, right?
The funneling. So you need to get exactly, and you're going down the length and where you go with that.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, again, a lot of it, and we know from being clinicians that a lot of that has to do with that pattern recognition that we have, right? So what are we finding out in that those initial broad questions that tell us where we need to go with the narrower questions? And so much of the time, sorry about the background noise, much of the time that's difficult for folks initially because they're trying to learn about communications, but now they're also wrapped up in the medical piece of it that they're still not comfortable with either, right? As third year students, which is where we tend to do these simulated client scenarios. And so it's a matter of, I think initially not being so focused on exactly what the question is that you're asking when you're getting more narrow, but just getting skilled at picking out the thing that's interesting for you or that you want to know more about and getting more detailed in your questioning about that.
Kind of like asking questions in a podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, you guys are pros at this already because you do this all the time for the podcast. Yeah. But I would be curious what your experience has been with having to do that, right? Having to use that style of questioning. Was it something that you had to learn for podcasting, or was that something that already came naturally to you because of having practiced it, you know, unbeknownst to you maybe while you were, you know, practicing as a clinician?
Look at her flipping the script, Mike.
She's good. She's good.
You want to take that one?
Well, I mean, it was a bit unbeknownst to me. I would say it's been more practice, and then curiosity, like honestly, I'm just genuinely interested. So I tend to ask open-ended questions because of that, because I actually want them to tell me more. So it kind of comes natural because of that.
I personally feel Mike is better at it from a podcast perspective than I am. I have to be more conscious too. Like you said, sometimes be quiet. And we did get feedback towards the start of our podcast on that, and we've improved, we being me. And then secondly, as Mike has said, curiosity leads you down the paths that you want to go in order to try and dig deeper, whether that is for what you think will be the benefit of the listeners or to really dig deep and learn on that understanding. And that's more clinician-based, I think, as well, too. We've been trained specifically to do that.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, curiosity is something we talk about with our students all the time, because I think, you know, sometimes they're so goal oriented, particularly when they're learning, right? They want to get her done and like get to the finish line and then move on because they feel so inefficient and that, you know, they're embarrassed about that and whatever it happens to be. But I love when I get to take a history because it's fun for me to learn about stuff. Like, because I love being around people and learning about people. And so, when I learned more about this and this sort of science of communication and, you know, using these open-ended questions and what are the ways that we can do that in an artful manner, it like opened up a whole bunch of stuff for me because I was like, man alive, this is such a great way to, again, build those relationships and to get that information that we really want that sometimes is difficult to get at if we're using sort of traditional instant gratification style questioning techniques, right? So.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm just thinking, like when you said get at information we're trying to get at, I found too, lots of times it was like not even on the radar. Like it was unknown information becomes uncovered. And you're like, well, wait a minute, that is important. The client didn't even realize it was important, but it is. Yeah, nice. How do you use this? This is sort of shifting gears in open-ended questions, but switching from maybe client, like the building trust, everything's going well. What about an angry client? So I don't want to say it's adversarial, but let's just say it's a tense conversation.
Yeah.
How do you use an open-ended question to maybe disarm or diffuse or just simmer things down?
So this is an interesting segue because we're going to be in the next episode talking about nonverbal communication. And that's such an important tool when it comes to a situation like this. But I think as far as how we might ask questions in that type of scenario, when there's conflict, is, you know, asking something like, you know, tell me about what's going on for you here. I can tell that you're feeling upset. And then shutting up, right? And also being a little bit cautious about the tone of our voice and all those other things that we'll talk about with nonverbals. And I think that, you know, oftentimes people just want to be heard. And so if we give them the opportunity to talk about why it is that they're upset, much of the time that diffuses everything. And especially if there's an area where we can be genuinely empathetic, genuinely apologetic, right? So if there was some sort of mistake that the team made, to be able to own that and talk about what we're going to do differently in the future to prevent it happening again. Because people don't want to, most of the time, like people aren't out there to like, you know, punish the veterinary clinic, right? They would prefer probably to maintain a relationship with you. But it's about being heard and having your experience validated, I think, much of the time. And that's a really just a human thing, right? All of us want that.
Yeah. I can see how these are going to tie together, like with what you said, tell me, and then bringing empathy in, and then the nonverbal. So I guess, yeah, wrapping up the open-ended questions, before we head into the nonverbal, the reflective listening, the empathy, any like tactics or, you know, something that the listeners can practice at home to work on this skill?
Yeah. So one of the things that I love and what we have our vet students do when they're learning to do this well is we have them write down open-ended questions for each area of their history. And so what we find is because it's not natural, people will come in with a template. And so they'll have cues for themselves. And that really works well because the more often you practice, the better. And so I think, you know, short of doing that, like that's great if people are able to do that. But short of doing that, the challenge that I like to give folks is if you can, in your normal conversations with your family members, your staff members, whatever it is, friends, just challenge yourself to be conscious of the way that you are asking questions. And when you find yourself asking closed-ended questions, make a real effort to ask two open-ended questions in a day, right? So even if it's, you know, instead of saying, you know, was today a busy day? Say, how was your day today? Or what was your day like? What was the best thing about your day? And, you know, John, you're mentioning with your kids, that's how I ask my kids about their day. Because otherwise, if I say, how was your day? Much of the time, how gets taken as closed-ended. They'll say, it was fine, or it was good. And I don't get anything other than that.
Kids are pros at that. Kids are your, I was thinking of Mike asking that question. I was like, my answer, go have kids.
Yeah.
They'll teach you. Even if you think it's the best open-ended question, they're going to bring it into two or three words and you're like, all right, I need to reframe that question next time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my thing is I say, you know, just consciously choose two, maybe three open-ended questions in your day. See how it feels. If it's like, hey, I always do that, then great. That's good. That's good sort of awareness to have. But if you're finding it really difficult and you have a difficult time framing that question and you're finding that you're not getting the answers you're looking for, then that's something for you to practice. So that'd be my go-to challenge for folks.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please shared the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.